people are dealing with their survival. They are not playing. See, they teach us play. Clown, play, clown. We will be serious. And I say that's why as one-tenth of the people on the planet, there's only one-tenth people on the planet who are white. But they appear very powerful because they are all focused on how they classify themselves. See, they don't call themselves Euro-American. They call themselves white. Now they tell us, call yourself African-American. So you're not even focused. See, what color are we? See how quiet?
We have an age.
We are black in shades of black. But as long as we are running from this, there's an African proverb that says, when the fool learns the game, the players have to first. See, in other words, we have been completely deceived about what is really going on.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the 5W1A show. I know we've been on a long hiatus. Life has been pretty hectic. It's the horror day season, and you know what comes with the horror day seasons. So on this episode of the 5W1A show, I have I don't want to say a guest because he's here so frequently, Smoking Damages, but we do have a new guest, Helen B. I've been, in communication with her for, a few months for a while. She has some constructive ideas. So I invited her onto the show, and I'm pretty sure you guys will enjoy her takes and whatnot. I'll bring them in right now. Hello, Helen and Smoking Damages.
Good evening.
Hey, you can be heard. So,
hello, everyone. Hello.
Hey, so all the way from London. It's a bright, sunny day. Joking? No, it's 11 o'clock. It's 11, just past 11 o'clock at night. Lovely, yeah. Nice, cold night in sunny London.
Dedication. Show some dedication. We appreciate you giving us your time. Hopefully this will be a constructive program, which I'm pretty sure it'll be. That's why I had you both on. And let's just first start off with you, Smoking Damages. How's the horror days been treating you? If that's what you
don't like this season. for lots and lots of different reasons. Actually, I was talking with Helen B about this earlier, funny enough. We're saying about the one of the reasons I don't like this holiday season is the disingenuousness of white people. I don't know if this ever happens to anyone else out there, anyone else that's going to be listening to this broadcast as well. With some white people, you usually find, even if it's white people that you see all the time, right, you see them all the time, they don't say anything to you, and then around this time the disingenuous weird sort of stuff comes out where they're Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. How you doing? Merry Christmas. Merry. And she said, well, why are you saying Merry Christmas? See, they're just being disingenuous, right? And I just think, why are you saying Merry Christmas to you? Why are you saying Merry Christmas to me now? You know, you didn't say anything to me yesterday. You're not going to say anything to me probably the day after or the day after that. We'll just go back, you know, playing your part in racism, white supremacy and stuff. It's almost like I was saying earlier to Telepi, it's almost like they're saying they've given themselves permission on that day to say, you know, Merry Christmas, like Merry Christmas, nigga, or something like that, right? Yeah. Because it's, you know, it's okay to pet the niggers at this time. You know, they are wild animals most of the time. You know, we're all wild animals, but they give themselves permission to come up and say hello to you and pet you, especially if they're with their children. And, you know, just go and pet them. They're all right on this day. You can go and say hello to them and stuff. Merry Christmas. Yeah, very, very disingenuous, very tacky. Like Mr. Fuller says, the relationship never, ever goes, you know, never gets better than tacky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. 11 months, 11 and a half months, they treat you like, you know, less than, and all of a sudden, you know, the horror days come around and it's, how you been?
Have you had that same experience as well?
For the most part,
the Merry Christmas type thing from a lot of white people.
Absolutely. I mean, like, you just saw me, you know, a few months ago, and you just walked right past me. But, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. It's to be expected. Helen, do you have any comments on the horror days, how they've been treating you?
I've experienced the same thing as well. White people being tacky, you know, but for the most part, same thing. I can't even, I don't even know where to start. Like, they ignore me, or, you know, very dry hello, morning, or whatever. But, when the holidays come, it's hi. Hey, how are you doing? It's like, what? Where's all this coming from? Like, I'm just like, whoa. I'm always taken aback. It's like Smoke and Damage just said, tacky, trashy, and terroristic. Because, you know, you can't have an attitude, or you can't be like, oh, where's this coming from? You gotta play along. You know. So yeah, same thing.
Yeah, if you don't comply, we'll just immediately move to the terroristic part, won't it? Like, this Nico's got an attitude.
Hello,
I wish him Merry Christmas.
or I'll turn into the angry black woman if I don't, you know, return the same energy or don't speak or whatever. So, yeah,
exactly.
Same thing every year, to be expected. So. We'll just get right into the actual program. I'm Smoking Damages. You sent me a video with a guy I wasn't really that familiar with. And, I mean, he's a very deceptive, suspected racist. Tell us, how did you come across this video? Actually, it's about, tell us, how did you come across this video? Give us a little bit about the video.
You know, I really cannot even remember now how I came across the video, but I am a bit familiar with Russell Brand. A lot of people are familiar with Russell Brand over here. He used to sort of co-host the kind of, I guess it's the adjunct program of Big Brother. It's called, it's another one that used to be called Big Brother's Big Mouth afterwards, where you'd have the contestants on there and some audience participation, etc. So he got quite well known after that. And he's he's a good comedian, right? He's a funny guy when he's doing his comedy sketches, etc. Quote, unquote, funny, right? He's a funny guy. So, that's how, so a lot of people in England know a lot about Russell Brand, right? He's quite a good comedian. He's quite a good person in terms of his craft, isn't he? But what drew me to this one, obviously, he had John Barnes on his show, and what's the name of the I think, yeah, it's called, he's got a YouTube page now. When it first started off, it was only a few, considering who he is, there was only maybe a few thousand on there. Now it's grown to about 4.5 million or something like that. He's got quite a few subscribers on his channel. And it's and he's got a podcast, his latest one's called It's All Wrong, they're showcasing the rich while ordinary people suffer, right? And I was just going to have a look at it. I was going to have a little listen to see what he was talking about, because sometimes he's one of these deceptive ones that talk about capitalism. They talk about, what else does he talk about on it? He talks about capitalism, just class system, etc. Like, there's always other stuff happening. It's not race and white supremacy. Race and white supremacy is a bit of a distraction, etc., etc. It's just like a lot of deceptive racists usually do anyway. So you've got this latest one. The title is deceptive because it doesn't say anything about racism in the title, but it's an extract from a conversation that he's having with a black male called John Barnes. John Barnes is a very famous footballer, non-white black male footballer over here, and he's retired now, but he's quite outspoken, and usually he's sort of like the go-to black person, one of these kind of talking heads. Sometimes when there's stuff about racism now, they always get John Barnes to say stuff about racism, right? Anyway, so on Russell Brand's latest podcast, he's got an extract from that conversation on his YouTube thing. It's only about 9 minutes long. I'd advise everybody to go onto his page and check out what John Barnes has to say. John Barnes has got this new book out, right? And he says his book is about, it's an intersectional book about discrimination and bias, right? But he's talking about racism with Russell Brand on this latest podcast. And the first thing that Russell Brand says, he says, do you think, this is how he introduces the thing, he goes, do you think that racial tensions are being stoked in order to turn ordinary working people against one another? That's what he says on his podcast, right? That's the introduction. Do you think racial tensions are being stoked in order to turn ordinary working people against one another? So immediately when I heard that, I thought, okay, so he's already tried to frame the discussion in a way that he wants the discussion to go, right? Which he doesn't really need that much help from John Barnes, because I've heard John Barnes previously talk about stuff regarding racism, and he was criticized roundly a lot for his opinion. And VGQ, he's allowed to say exactly, victims guarantee qualification, he's allowed to say exactly what he thinks racism is all about and what he sees, what he thinks it is. So, you know, he's allowed to say that. But one of the things why I was interested to watch this one, because John Barnes has a lot of form in this. He had a lot of criticism quite a while ago when Liam Neeson did his little tell on himself talking about when he wanted to go out and kill a black person because this black person apparently sexually assaulted or something one of his loved ones, right? And the first thing that Liam Neeson said was he asked the loved one, were they black, right? Now, a lot of people were obviously sort of kind of condemning Liam Neeson for saying that. They gave him a little slap on the wrist kind of thing. But then John Barnes came out over here in this media over here. You probably might not have heard it in the States, but then this is what he said over here. He was talking about Liam Neeson deserves a medal just because Liam Neeson said stuff about, just because he said stuff about him going out and wanting to kill another black person. Right. Now, Liam Neeson didn't come out and say I was practicing racist and white supremacy or I did something that was racist. He just was talking about it was wrong for him to have so much vengeance in his heart. I don't remember him coming out and apologizing actually for being racist anyway. But John Barnes just thought he deserved a medal for that. Right. So which I thought was interesting. But anyway, when Russell Brand did introduce that like that, he said, do you think that racial tensions are being stoked? I just thought, I'm not sure what he means when he says racial tensions being stoked, right? I mean, is he talking about the victims of racism and white supremacy? I mean, if there is such a system that affects black people in economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war, then surely one of the effects of being subject to such a system is a lot of times being tense or feeling tension. So, you know, surely more of an accurate way to say this is people who classify themselves as white and who practice racism contribute to that system And one of the effects of that system is tension, right? But he didn't say that. He just said, do you think racial tensions are being stoked? Anyway, in order to, and he says, yeah, in order to turn ordinary working people against one another. I also didn't understand what that means. Ordinary working people. Who's he talking about? Right? I didn't understand when he said ordinary working people in reference to the subject that he's talking about. Because if, I mean, there's an estimated 1.42 million unemployed people in the UK alone, right? So, or maybe, you know, if you, or maybe if you have a lot of money and you don't work, I'm not really sure what working has to do with anything in terms of who practices racism and who doesn't. And by the way, if you, and say if you do get a job by tomorrow lunchtime, then now Russell Brand is apparently talking about you, right? Or is he, right? Maybe if you get a job as a policeman, then that means you're automatically not racist. And maybe if you get, if you're employed as a teacher, then you automatically are, right? I don't really know what he means when he said that. I'd love to ask him some questions. Yeah, your job status has nothing to do with whether you practice racism or not, right? Maybe if you're unemployed or something, the categories of racist or not racist probably don't even apply to you. And, you know, you're in a category all of your own, wherever that is, right? So I just think it makes a lot of sense what he says, unless you just don't think about it. I just think he's an expert in the use of words. And people should really, really pay attention to what he says when he says it. Just analyze it for deceptiveness.
I'll go. Unless Helen, do you want to go or I'll go?
No, you can go. I have lots to say.
Okay, that's fine. Because I'll, you know, make it slightly brief. When I saw that, I just thought, you know, this guy is confused. Oh man. The Russell Brand, he's very deceptive because I asked you, Smoking Dim, just some questions because I wasn't familiar with him. So apparently he's like, you know, he has a large following. He's pretty well known. And for him to get that non-white victim out there to say all this stuff and, you know, basically support his arguments and basically say, hey, you know, it's not just my view. This black guy here saying the same thing, and you know he lived this, so I can't be racist because he's saying the same thing. It's kind of like he's hiding behind the footballer. I can't think of his name. The former football
John
player.
Bonds.
Yes.
Yeah, John Bonds.
John Bonds, former football player. So from that perspective, it's very he's very deceptive and very dangerous. He has a huge following, like you said before, and I didn't even know that, you know, he had a comedian type thing, and then he was married to Katy Perry. So he has a huge following, and to pump this stuff out and have a victim, give the victim a platform is just, you know, just from the book of white supremacy, you know, pretty much the same old trick of white supremacy. Helen, if you want to jump in, you can.
Okay. All right. I'm not familiar with Russell Brand's stand-up. I've always wanted to watch a movie by him called Get to the Greek. I've never seen that, but I heard it was good for some reason, so I had to check that out. I see that he was also in Despicable Me. I don't know what voice he did, but I have watched that movie, so obviously I've seen something that he did. Racial tensions. I want to know what does he mean, Russell Brand, because he's the one who said it. I would like to know what he means when he uses that term racial tension. Ordinary working people, who is he talking about, white people or non-white people? Promoting, red flag, promoting this black male who he knows is confused, just like me, about racism, white supremacy. John Bonds, a man of color. That's what he called himself. I thought that was interesting. But VGQ, he has a right to say, you know, whatever he says. Russell Brand used the term unfair. This is going out to everybody who's listening to this. Find an old dictionary, not too old, but 10, 20 years old, and look up the term fair. Fair and unfair. Look at all of the definitions for that word. Number two, replace the term fair with white. And notice if it changes the structure of the sentence of whatever you're talking about. If it doesn't, then they mean one and the same. What else? Oh, he stuck up John Bonds. He stuck up for Liam Neeson. I thought that was very interesting. I think most of us would think. Oh, somebody said, I don't know which one it was, whether it was Russell Brand or John. I think most of us want to move beyond racism. No, I don't want to move beyond racism. I would like for it to be eliminated.
Yep, that's what Russell Brand said. He said most of us want to move beyond. Yeah,
I didn't put a name next to it, but yeah, I wrote that down. And I was like, no, but most non-white people, or I won't even say most, I know there are some non-white people that would like to move beyond racism, but that's only because they don't understand racism, white supremacy. So of course, yeah, for lack of understanding, yeah, they want to move beyond it, but no, the system needs to be eliminated, and that's what we don't understand as non-white people. Do y'all want to jump in and say anything, or because I got something else?
Yeah, I when you brought up when he described himself, Mr. Barnes described himself as a man of color. When he first started talking, he said, I'm a light-skinned Jamaican man of color. And, you know, just from that point on, I was like, you know, I kind of knew what to expect when he used all these other descriptive terms.
Yeah, I caught that.
I was like, okay, I kind of know where this is going. And I just listened to him, and I just, oof, you know, the confusion is just is right.
If you want to, yeah, he started talking about how he's from an elitist family or something in Jamaica, and he's light skinned and blah. And then he did point out somewhere else in there where he said something about the government in Jamaica. You know, it's not about racism because they're all black. I'm paraphrasing here. And he said, it's not really about racism. It's a power structure in Jamaica. And it's not about racism because they're all black. But then you do have very, very light skinned people in the government and also white people in the government in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I thought, how's that not about racism? How do you think they got there? Mm-hmm. How do you think they have all that hype, that kind of quote unquote colorism where the white people are in power and the white people are in power and the very, very light skinned so-called black people are in power in Jamaica, if that doesn't have anything to do with racism? Jamaica was a slave colony. For God's sake, of course it is founded on slavery. The whole so-called country of Jamaica is founded on racism, white supremacy. So I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, you got a British so-called British government, a British head of state in so-called Jamaica. So I'm not really sure. And also, I do have to point out as well, John Barnes is married to a white female. Right, and he was married. Right, and I'm only pointing out because I think it's significant, and I think he was married to another white female beforehand. So, am I to just think that because he's an elite person, then maybe this is why he's with a white? And if he thinks that, you know, white, he was then saying about how racism doesn't affect him in the same kind of way as it would affect other people because he's a so-called elite person, right? Mm-hmm. So. His wife is backed by an entire system of racism, white supremacy, right? His wife has more power than him, even though he doesn't think she does, right? How is it that he actually even became attracted to his wife in the first place? He doesn't even know that, probably doesn't even want to question himself on why he prefers to be with white women rather than black women. That's a part of a system of race and white supremacy, conditions a lot of us to think that light is better than black, right? Light is better than dark. So that would be another factor of how he's been victimized by that system. So, but anyway, go on, Helen.
So smoking damages, you just brought up something. I didn't even write it down. But when he brought up the whole thing about how he's elite, quote unquote, he also said something about, how he was mistreated when he was with the coaches or whatever. And then...
bananas thrown at him and stuff like that,
and then he said, but I'm also I think I'm eating, he said he's something about like eating shrimp,
but I'm eating lobster.
Stuff. How is that, like, you know, what a crazy world we live in. I'm eating like this. I was like,
This means he's not a victim anymore, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I was like, oh, poor baby. Anyway, one of them said, I think it was him, find ways of coming together. I'm like, here we go with the so-called unity talk, which is not going to happen. Yeah, we are together. We're all together at the bottom of the slave ship. I wish somebody would say that, but, you know, what am I talking about? His book is called Uncomfortable Truths About Racism, a book about discrimination and bias. Two words white people love, especially when we say Bonds, VGQ, light skin, yeah, which I just spoke about. You see, y'all already covered what I, the elite part in. Oh, he said something about his father being a diplomat and his father was a chauffeur. That is really interesting. I would like to know how that happened. If his father didn't experience racism, white supremacy. Right. Like, sir.
How are you elite and a chauffeur? That seems like Negro.
I don't know if y'all caught that part, but yeah, I was like, that's interesting. I'd like to know how he got there.
Diplomat to chauffeur, or was it the other way around? I don't know.
But diplomat to chauffeur.
Diplomat to chauffeur. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. How can Bond speak from a white privileged perspective? And Russell, what's the name? Russell Brand, he was supposed to stop him right there, because Bond said that. And I'm like, oh, wow, why is this going on? But you got to always think, when white people up someone or push forward someone who's non-white and talking about racism, you have to think that person is confused. They want to do that. They don't want us to make any sense. They don't want to bring clarity to the situation, to the conversation. And I'm like, wow, encouraging him in that way. That was horrible. Russell Brand was supposed to question him, and he didn't do that. He just let him talk. And anybody want to say anything else?
Yeah. Do you know what I have to say as well? With his resources as well. His resources are now going to be passed down to people classified as white after he dies, right? Because if his offspring are so-called biracial and his wife is white, which she is, the offspring, I mean, he was looking at an article the other day with the so-called biracial people, the offspring of people who are classified as white and black, usually tend to then pair off afterwards with people who are classified as white, because they've also been conditioned, just like John Barnes, right, to go with people who are white. So all those resources are going to go back to people who are classified as white in one way or another. If John Barnes doesn't know that, then that's another aspect of his victimization that he doesn't, I would say, fully understand, right? Because that's going to be another way, you know, you're not supposed to pass down resources to another generation of black people if you are classified as black. That's another cornerstone of racism, white supremacy. And this whole kind of thing when he said about working classes are being convinced or manipulated to practice racism, white supremacy. Nah, I don't think so. That's another massive myth there, right? I just think they influence each other. The so-called lowly white supremacists that don't have much resources, they influence the white supremacists who are smarter or who are more powerful, and the more powerful ones, they equally influence the other white supremacists who don't have lots of resources as well. So I'm not really sure that when people talk about the poor white supremacists and the rich white supremacists, or the ones who are less powerful or the ones who are more powerful, Karl Rittenhouse, Anders Breivik, etc., they've influenced untold smarter white supremacists probably for generations to come. Mm-hmm. They all play their integral parts in that whole machine or engine of racism, white supremacy. And I would like to say as well, this whole kind of togetherness, because they're both big football fans. Obviously, John Barnes used to play football. Russell Brand is a huge football fan as well, right? And they always talk. I remember that little while ago when they had that big fiasco about, I don't follow football, so I can't remember what type of thing it was, if it was World Cup or if it was Euros, I don't know. But that whole thing where the whole country, it seemed like in the media, white supremacist media, everyone's all together. Wow, football brings everyone together. Oh, it's so unifying in sport. Everyone's all together. As soon as those three black people the free black males missed those penalties, all of a sudden it was nigger this, nigger that, banana this, that, you ape, you this, blah, blah, blah. I thought, yeah, this veneer of togetherness, that's all it is. It's just a veneer, right? They don't want to deal with racism, white supremacy. You just want to pretend. You just want to play football. You just want to, I don't know, have sex with white people and just pretend that racism, white supremacy doesn't exist. And unfortunately, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You have something to say, Helen?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, that's unfortunately like a old tactic where, you know, they may treat, you know, some victims better than others, significantly better than others, whether it be, you know, monetary or
exactly,
you know, so-called titles or status, whatever you want to use. And, you know, if I'm not being treated like the rest of them. Hey, you know, some victims just that's all they want. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that validation really, really causes like mass confusion within a victim. And it's truly, you know, tragic with that white validation or white coddling does to victims. I mean, all over, as you can see, it's just not a United States thing. I mean, this is over in London. It's the same old tactic, and, you know, go throughout history, it's the same tactic. If you want to jump in, Helen, go ahead.
I'm just curious. That's the last thing I'm going to say about this. I'm curious to what Mr. Bond's definition of racism, white supremacy is. I'm interested in what's his definition for injustice, for racism, and for racism, white supremacy. Because I got the impression that he was kind of lumping everybody in. Like, it was even though he said white working class, you know, being vile or something like that, to that nature, it seemed like towards the end, it seemed like he's talking about everybody, even himself. And I'm like, I don't know. So yeah, that's all I have to say about that. BGQ.
Yeah, it's a whole kind of class thing. They're really, really, and this is why a lot of people, I'd say white people and black people, they love Russell Brand, right? Because he's always talking about class system. He's always talking about the class system. Racism is not that much of a problem. It's really just about class. This whole sort of class thing. Like, what kind of class are black people in? Black people are in the victim class. That's what we are. We like to pretend that we're not. And maybe if we just get enough money, we're not going to be victims of racism, white supremacy. Ask Bill Cosby, right? If you're not a victim of racism, white supremacy, ask Oprah Winfrey. She's still a victim of racism, white supremacy. Cuba Gooding Jr., right? The list goes on. It don't matter who you are. Yeah, LeBron, right? It don't matter who you are. You are still a victim of racism, white supremacy. It may differ slightly. From country to country, so-called country to country, it might differ how white racist man and racist woman practice racism, white supremacy, but it's still the same thing. It still tastes like white supremacy to me. It's just different ways of practicing it. But, you know, this whole class thing is such a, wow, it confuses a lot of victims of racism, white supremacy, this whole kind of class thing where, and I think in the podcast as well, he was very, very careful to point out, he said, the working class, they couldn't blame the working class white people fast enough. And I thought, well, they're blaming them, so they're blaming white people for practicing racism. Well, they should, shouldn't they? Right? Practicing racism is wrong, whether you're so-called working class. And I think we established earlier, working class doesn't even mean if you have a job or not. Even if you're unemployed, you're so-called working class. I don't know what the hell that term means. I would really, really appreciate a definition from people who talk about this class thing when really they should be talking about racism, white supremacy.
One more thing about the whole class thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a part of my vocabulary. I just want to put that out there. I'm only talking about it because it was mentioned on Mr. Russell's podcast. But even if we're going to go on that, if we're going to say, oh, we're going to blame it on class, who put that class in order? Who's in charge of it? Who's backing it? If we're going to use that, which we shouldn't, but if you are going to think like that, like, at least ask yourself, who's in charge of putting that class system in order?
Exactly. If it's a capitalist system, who runs the capitalist system? If it's exactly. a communist system, who runs the communist system? If you're talking about middle classes, who's doing better in that middle class section? Is it black people? If you compare the so-called middle class black people to the so-called middle class white people, is it the black people doing better or is it the white people doing better? If some other exactly. black people, non-white people are talking about, well, maybe it's about LGBTQ rights or women's rights or whatever it is, right? How is it in the women's movement that black women are still doing worse than the white women? And if you look at the trans issues, the black trans are still doing worse than the white trans. And if you look at the just LGBTQ in general, all the LGBTQ black people are doing worse than it. All roads lead back to racism, white supremacy. But people just like to put these mm-hmm. other things in place in front and say, no, it's not racism. It's other things. It's class. Nah, it's racism, white supremacy.
I'll just, you know, add this on and then we can switch gears. And these classisms and all these other isms, so-called power system, ranks, someone has to have the power to reward and punish. And if we look at, you know, all of them, they all go back to white people as being the most powerful people to reward and punish based on however they see fit. And all these classisms and whatever, sexism and whatever else ism that you want to use. Total confusion when those isms come about. And switching gears, great on that last topic. Awesome. Switching gears, there was a case I haven't heard about until I heard it on Gus's show maybe a week or so ago. There was a killing of a black man named Michael Williams in Iowa, allegedly suspected, you know, I say that grudgingly because I think it's obvious, but for the sake of not name calling, I'll just say a suspected racist Stephen Vogel was sentenced to life in prison for first degree murder and abuse of a corpse and the death of 44-year-old Michael Williams. He was beaten, hanged, and set on fire. I'm sure you guys heard about this because you are, you know, pretty abreast of things. So what did you see about this, Smoking Damages?
Found dead, bound and burning. They arrested four white people. They do charge them with various different things. And notably as well, I have to say one of them was someone called Julia Cox, right? That she's a woman, right? Julia Cox, I think, the one of the people, right? So, you know, just going back, you know, racism cannot continue without the full participation of racist woman as well. Just to put that, I'm just going to put that out there because, you know, a lot of people always try and say, yeah, all these lynchings and all these blah, blah, it's white men. Now, all you have to do is look at a couple of these photographs and you see a lot of children and you see women there as well.
Let me just jump in real quick. Yeah, Julia Cox is the suspected racist mother. She was arrested and, you know, helping, you know, be an accomplice with that.
Disposing of the body and stuff with him, yeah.
Yeah. So Julia Cox, his mother's boyfriend Roy Gardner, and Vogel's friend Cody Johnson. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the article I was reading as well was saying about prompted fears of a hate crime in the midst of racial strife roiling the country. I don't even know what racial strife is or roil. I don't know what roiling is, right? I had to look up that word, roiling the country, right? And it also said, obviously, evidence didn't point to race as a factor, right? It didn't point as a factor for who? I'd like to ask that question. And anyway, roiling, I looked it up and it says, to make turbid or muddy by disturbing the sediment. So this is what the article, I can't remember who the journalist is that wrote this article describing this incident. So in other words, it's the same kind of thing like what Russell Brand was saying. It's funny enough, circular conversation. Some of these people that write these articles that talk about this subject, they're saying that it kind of is another thing talking about stirring up tension, right? This murder stirs up tension, roiling the country at the moment, apparently, stirring up sediment, apparently, that's what it means. So, I don't know, I just think it's a continuous practice of racism, white supremacy, and sometimes you get incidents like this, lots of incidents like this. So, yeah, I don't know if everything was okay before that incident, and I don't know if it's okay since. So, I don't know what that whole terminology was all about. And so four white people being charged for it, and I'm not sure why the NAACP there's some commentary I've seen about this where people are blaming some non-white people are blaming the NAACP for coming out quickly in agreement with some of the white people in charge and saying, you know, the NAACP is to blame as well because they're backing up these white people are in charge and saying, well, you guys are saying it's nothing to do with racism or there's no evidence to say that it was motivated by racism. I'm thinking, well, who put the NAACP there? Who employs these black people to be part of the so-called NAACP? Do the people in the NAACP, the non-white people there, do they run anything? Do they have to ask white people permission before they're allowed to do something that they want to do for black people if they were so motivated? Right? You're gonna have to. That's why that part of the code is so important. No name calling victims of racism, white supremacy. Look to who the people are that are in power. Who are the people in power of the NAACP? Who's in charge of the NAACP? It's not black people. You know, it's like that whole kind of thing where, you know, we know someone's running the world. We don't know who it is, but we know it ain't us if you're black.
For sure. Helen, do you, I can go or you can go.
I don't have much to say about this, but that is tragic. Mm-hmm. I want somebody to say their names at the end of this, because let's not forget their names on top of Mr. Michael Williams' name. But this happened in 2020. Why am I just finding out about this in 2021, going into 2022? I don't understand. That's ridiculous. With all the social media, why didn't this story get enough? Well, I know why, but I'm just saying, rhetorical question. Why didn't it get a lot of, you know, attention? The first thing I heard was from the police investigators that it's not targeted because of his race. And I'm like, you know, almost in a sense, they're right, because he's not a race. Michael is non-white. Only a white person is, you know, could be associated with a race. That's why it's called racism, right? I don't know if y'all could further explain, because I think I mumbled that a little bit.
Go ahead. Oh, I totally get what you're saying. It's like Gus always said, there's only one race, and that's the white race.
Correct. Thank you.
So there was, you know, a few things from this article I found, you know, interesting, not for lack of a better term. Mr. Vogel, suspected racist, used to call Michael Williams Black Mike. That was his nickname for him. And, you know, Black Mike, I mean, I think, and my understanding of racism, black means dehumanize. So, you know, all the times he was calling him Black Mike, along with the image of Michael Williams, he was dehumanizing him in his mind. So it was easy for him just to dispose of him, just choke him, strangle him, burn him up, and do him how he did him. And, you know, it's, you know, I can just give a warning to non-white people, especially black people that have so-called white friends, because it sounds like there was some sort of a relationship to where they would hang out, or, you know, there was some sort of intimacy, not in a sexual way, but there was some familiarity between this group of suspected racism and Mr. Williams. So I was,
and just, I want to say allegedly right there, yeah. Allegedly, because they're I don't know why they're trying to puddle this so-called friendship between them or association.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. I gathered for you to call somebody by a nickname, there has to be some. That's just me, though. But like I allegedly, like you said, because we don't know. We just now hearing about this. So, you know, who knows what they all doctored up. But I would just warn to non-white people, especially black people, about so-called white friends getting in close quarters with suspected racists, man, because there's so many stories like this. The Quan Charles situation a few months ago, that 15-year-old kid who was going out with his white friends and he wound up dead and dismembered. If anybody remembers Lennon Lacey, back in, I think that was 2015 or 14 or something like that. He was in North Carolina. He was dealing with a white girl and hanging out with white friends, and he wound up hung. They actually have a good documentary on PBS on that situation. And there was another situation in St. Louis some months ago. Please forgive me for not remembering the names, where this non-white victim was hanging out at a, I would just call him a racist. He openly used the N-word flagrantly. His interview, he did it with a Confederate flag behind him, you know, denying any involvement in the actual, they call it a suicide, but, you know how that goes. So those are just...
And don't forget about this non-white black female who went to a so-called sleepover with other white women, female friends or whatever. She was found dead, and they still to this day, nobody was charged. Nobody's been charged for her murder, and that's been years.
Right, right. That's another one. There's just a myriad of examples of, you know, non-white people just getting into these close quarters with a suspected racist, and, you know, a lot of the times the outcome isn't good, and, you know, it's really tragic, and hopefully we can... you know, as a whole, just kind of just be more suspicious of suspected racists. This is really a sad story. Smoking Damages, you had anything to add off to this?
No, not really. It's just, I guess I'll just say that, like you both saying, they really do get us to lower our guard. The whole thing about being codified in terms of explaining to one another, trying to be a little bit more codified and explain that one central part about all white people, all people who are classified as white, who classify themselves as white, are to be suspected of practicing racism, white supremacy. They're suspected racists, and that's for a reason. It's not personal. It's just, like Needy Fuller says, it's not personal, it's just business. Because this, time and time and time again, we let our guards down, and sometimes tragedy strikes. Right? We either end up thinking that we can do exactly the same things that white people can do in terms of getting into trouble, mischief, whether you're in school, etc. And a white person, nothing happens to the white people, but you will, because you know you haven't got a whole system of racism, white supremacy backing you, but they have. You know, and in terms of just things just being straight up dangerous, you know, these are just textbook examples of how it can be very, very dangerous. You can't just run around, just let your guard down thinking that, oh no, this person's calling me Black Mike or whatever, right? And he's your friend, so he definitely wouldn't hurt me.
Right, right. We have a terrible drink together. And, you know, just another, James Byrd Jr., supposedly got a ride home from suspected racists, and they end up dragging him. That was a very famous case. I think last year, young black kid went to a sleepover, and the young racists were making, suspected racists were making him drink urine and whatnot, putting it on Snapchat, just totally humiliating and dehumanizing the young kid. So just a myriad of examples of just, you know, us being in
close. I remember that case.
Yeah.
Was that case as well with the black male as well? I think he was with a white female as well, and then just a little while before, he met his end as well. He was talking about how the race soldiers are not to blame. You know, racism's not that much of a big deal, etc. And I've been stopped and searched many times, and the white people were really, really fine. They were really, really fine with me. They were okay with me. And then he got into a little bit of a scuffle. I think he was defending a white woman from something, and a race soldier came up and just shot him.
Right, I know the exact, you know? His name escapes me.
I can't remember his name, but yeah, you know, again, letting our guard down.
Right, that I forget his name. It's on my page because I posted about it. I think he went to shake the officer's hand. The officer just blew him away. Yeah, so really tragic. Hopefully we just, you know, just as a whole become more aware and just more cautious of suspected races in general. We can switch gears to this Louisiana judge. I'm pretty sure most people have heard about this. Louisiana, there was a judge named Michelle Odinette who was recorded, you know, speaking her mind, which I don't have a problem with. You know, black people are niggers or roaches, or however you feel. Hey, so be it. So she was, you know, recorded saying it twice and comparing niggers to roaches. So she came under some backlash for it. And now, you know, in the midst of studying and reading this case, she was a prosecutor in New Orleans back in the 90s. So they're reviewing all the cases that she prosecuted back in the day. So hopefully many victims will benefit from that and get released and hopefully get compensation, as much compensation as possible. Smoking Damage, did you have anything on this? And I'll just jump in at some point.
I was watching some of that video. Some of the commentary on this is really interesting. And I was watching the video when she was talking, when she sounds really excited, her and the rest of the family. I'm not quite sure exactly how many people are in that sound clip. I know it's her husband, and I think her son, and I think some other people, but I'm not quite sure. I can't be quite sure on that. But they sounded so thrilled in that video. So we have a nigger. We have a nigger over there, like a roach and all that. Right. You know, they sounded really, really excited.
And it seems like they're just watching this just for entertainment. Hey, let's just put this on the TV for the family for some sort of entertainment. A nigger breaking into a car. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And apparently her neighbors, apparently she's been doing this kind of stuff for quite a while. That family, her and her family have been doing things like that quite a while. You know, she'd been baiting things in the hopes of, quote, like catching someone, et cetera, right? So that she'd been, so, you know, even if you are, I'm not saying it's okay to go and do commit crimes, but imagine now you're in a system of racism and white supremacy. Most of the time, non-white people have less resources in comparison to people who are classified as white. That's just a fact of the matter. Doesn't excuse crime, but it definitely is an explanation. Not an excuse, but it's definitely an explanation for why some things happen. And for them to just go out there and bait things in order to catch people, I just find it really, it's just so suspect. It's really, really suspect. And the way, like I said, and that speaks to how thrilled they were, where, you know, they didn't just catch a criminal. They caught a black criminal. So they're really excited that they caught a black person. So again, as well, I think that proves that, see, the smartest, she would be considered one of the smart white supremacists, right? She's in charge of law. She's handing down sentences to various different black people. She's in control of how many years these people get behind bars, or probably even if they're given death penalties, etc. Not sure if that state has death penalty. So there's another example of the smart white supremacists. They don't mind getting their hands dirty and putting in some physical work either, right? So they don't mind being less refined at times, right? So they, like I said before, they both influence each other, the stupid ones, the smart ones, the powerful ones. Power also changes. Less powerful people can gain power, etc., and powerful people can become less powerful. So is this judge the only one? That's another thing. Some of the commentary was a bit disturbing to me as well. I mean, expected, but from some non-white people who were covering this, and they were talking about, yeah, this judge is really good that she's been found out, etc. But what about the rest of them? What about the rest of the I don't know, the right. teachers, the right. journalists, the doctors, the nurses, the bin men, the bus drivers, they're all playing their important little parts in the system, right? Just right. because they're not outwardly, you know, yeah, this is this whole kind of thing, this confusing thing where I said, like, where Dr. Welsing was talking years ago on the cows, when she was saying about the percentage of non-white people who are so confused about racism, white supremacy. And I'm one of them, right? I'm still confused. But wow, when I hear that type of commentary, like, yeah, it's just these smart ones, got to really, really look out for these, but the other ones, they all do the same thing. Some people look at that judge and they think they wouldn't expect her. They might expect her to be a racist. They might suspect her a little bit, but they don't expect her to say the kind of stuff that she was saying. I mean, you know, behind closed doors, I suspect that most white people speak in exactly the same way that judge does, and does exactly the same thing.
Sure.
Yes. Well, what I have to say about this about this case, number one, white women do it best. Yes. Number two, what do white people talk about when non-white people are not in the room?
Absolutely.
That's something everybody who's listening out there, you need to really, that's a question you should ask yourself, most definitely. And another, something that I wrote down, being called to resign, AKA she's being asked to resign. And only, yeah.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, no, you're being called to resign. No, you're asking. And if you have to ask more than once, then you're begging. So let's be clear about that. And only a Supreme Court can remove a judge. So I don't care how many petitions they put out there. I don't care, you know, who says what. Only the Supreme Court can remove a judge. That's all I have to say about that. Oh, and I couldn't find I saw the video, but it was only like the news was playing it of what she was saying. And I wasn't able to find the unedited version,
yeah,
which was really interesting. Yeah, I could. And, I hate to, I don't know how else better to put this, but she pulled the Roseanne Barr, you know, oh, it's medication that caused me to talk, yeah. You know, to speak like that. Oh, I'm like, really? Okay. All right. So blaming like, medication.
Yeah, it seems, sorry. It seems like they don't even, you know, try to come up with a good excuse. Just say anything that just...
They don't could, because they know they don't have to. Mm-hmm. They know they don't have to. I can just say anything.
Right.
Something that happened years and years ago, there was a case where a white man killed another white man. And the guy who killed Harvey Milk, one of the things that he said, the reason why he killed Harvey Milk is because of the Twinkie defense. You could look it up. So, I mean, yes, Harvey Milk was a white man as well, but I'm just saying how they'll just come up with anything. So,
What was the Twinkie defense?
He was saying that that the reason why he killed Harvey Milk because of only eating Twinkies, because he was deprived of food. Like he was just out of it or whatever.
That messed up his brain.
Because he had beaten he had eaten so many Twinkies and whatever. Yeah, you could look it up. The Twinkie defense. I looked it up.
Well,
myself.
You know, they're
like,
all good. What? They're all good white people. You know, they have to be off their heads to do anything wrong, right? They have to be drunk. They have to be depressed, or something must be going wrong because ordinarily they just wouldn't be doing anything wrong at all. Right? if it's a black.
And
person,
I love when people say
a horrible black person. They're lucky.
A lot of people say that medication, there's no side effect of medication of racism. That's not a side effect. You know, that's
That's what that company came out and said to Roseanne Barr, isn't it? That,
mm-hmm.
Tried to pull that defensive. Yeah, we got many side effects of this medication.
But racism
is
not one of them. Exactly. That's all I have to say about this case.
Something noteworthy. They took her off the bench and replaced her with a black woman named Judge Vanessa Harris temporarily. So take that for what that's worth. You know, we'll take this.
Apparently a retired judge as well, wasn't it? Yeah, I think the non-white judge. I think, is this damage limitation or some sort of kind of attempt by the white supremacists to sort of say, you know, throw these Negroes a bone kind of thing. Like, you know, some sort of racist things happen. So just put, you know, we do care about
definitely.
You. We do care about you. We'll showcase a black person. We don't mind showcasing a black person for a little while just to kind of shut you guys up.
Yeah.
And the crazy part of it, it works. It works.
Absolutely.
This BS works each and every time, and it makes no sense. We haven't caught on to the banana in the tailgate yet. That's mind-boggling to me. But, you know, really cute.
It's true. They get away with it all the time. They get away with it so much, unfortunately. And I think they just kind of buying their time, just playing for time, and then sooner or later she probably might just, you know, be given a job back or just be transferred somewhere else, you know, or she might just be offered lots and lots of money for speaking engagements like Kyle Rittenhouse or something. She's still going to be playing her part in that system.
Thank you for saying that,
Smoking Damages. I just remembered something. White people are not fired, they are transferred.
Of course.
I mean, look at, and exactly what I was saying, like with power shifting, like in terms of how we look at this problem of racism and white supremacy, power can shift. A less powerful person can become really powerful. There's a lot of people that I've spoken to about this subject down through the years, and they're still stuck on that kind of thing where, you know, someone like Kyle Rittenhouse probably would be looked upon as a, you know, a less smart white supremacist, not very powerful. I don't know about that now. I mean, he seems to be really, really influential and really, really powerful and kind of really rich as well. Like, he's got a lot more resources than he has. So, you know, looking at terms of power and stuff like that and smarter racists and not so smart racists. Yeah, I don't know. I used to think like that, but now I'm kind of slowly changing my mind with that and thinking, you know, looking at it in a bit more holistically now. And I don't know if the whole smart, dumb, powerful, less powerful thing is that significant. I think it's significant, but not as significant as I thought it was before.
Right. And just to piggyback on what you said, and we can switch gears after this if no one else has anything else to say. You were saying Smoking Damages earlier on in your commentary that the ordinary white person, the bus driver, the librarian, the bank teller all plays their part. I would like to know who are these other, I would assume white people that are in this room. What are their jobs? What do they do? Who are these people? Let us know who was in there for this.
Exactly. Exactly.
We need to know everything about that. So
she since come out and said that this is not part of our vocabulary. Me and my family don't speak like this, right, etc. I mean, right. they sounded really, really, really comfortable. And if she's a judge, I mean, what does the rest of her family do? I'd like to know what her husband does, if he's in some sort of kind of position of influence. No matter what he does, he probably is able to influence other white people around him, like her son and the rest of the people that were in that room.
And judges seem to hang out with other judges. Who are her best friends? Who's her circle, you know, of people that she hangs out with? I mean, we have to...
Exactly. Is that the first time she used that word? The first time she used that word around people? There's other white people around there, her family, the rest of the people, like you say, judges hang around with other judges, prosecutors, etc., other lawmakers. It must be all, like I said, I think it was Dr. Worthing who said, like, some white people, if you're asking, like, what can you do about racism, white supremacy, let black people know what white people say when no black people are around. Let us know. We suspect we know anyway, but, you know, if you really are serious and you want to quote unquote help us to rid this word of this system of racism and white supremacy, you know, be more public about that. Let us know what these other white people are doing. Then we'll kind of, you know, we'll see how serious you are.
Sure, for sure. Great, great segment. Switching gears. Oh, it's my fault I didn't have everything pulled up. Oh, so Helen, she sent me an article with a black female having a medical condition, and they typically named it a white man's disease. And she was right on time with this article, because as I read it, it resonated with me, because I have a attempted family member going through some medical things, and the lack of care and concern that I read in that article kind of is like parallel to what I've seen in that situation. So that was right on time with that sin. So Helen, what did you see about this article that intrigued you, that made you want to speak on it?
Well, also about the beginning of the article, when she talked about her childhood, and at one point the movie Roots was played during that time, that Roots was played on TV. And when she went to school, a classmate, a so-called classmate, called her Toby. So while Black people see, oh, we're learning about racism, we're learning about slavery, white people see, oh, there's another way I can call them nigger without saying nigger. That's what I got from that. Mm-hmm. Oh, also, she has a twin sister, and either one of them were called nigger. And what would happen, the class would come to a halt, and the teacher would have the two Black students remove themselves, either go help the kindergarten. This happened to her in the third grade. So they would go help younger kids about 5 years old, or go, you know, go work with somebody, or go to the office while the teacher talks to the white students in the classroom. And I thought that was incorrect. Why you didn't leave the Black students in there so that they could hear what was being said? Right. All you're doing is teaching refinement at this moment. So that's how the article starts off. And then it talks about how she had this pain in her joint, and she'd go to the doctor. One excused her. Oh, it's nothing. Another one. Like, we have to be an advocate for ourselves. We have to be our own doctors. I'm not saying don't go to the doctor, but we also have to do our research. These are just suggestions, always suggestions. Reading this article made me think about how we need to be an advocate for ourselves, do our own research, take notes, ask a lot of questions, take someone with us, because we're in pain, or, you know, we're feeling the way we're feeling, we're not always able to think clearly. So have someone with you that could step in and ask questions and et cetera. And, you know, we have to take our health seriously. There's a saying, health is wealth, and that is so true. Because I don't care how much money you got, if you are feeling, you know, if your body has aches and pains and you're not feeling well, no amount of money could stop that. No amount of money could save you if you don't take care of yourself. And that's very important. Anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, I read that article and I just thought, yeah, this, I mean, even the title of the article as well was interesting as well, when it said medicine erased, what's the title? Medical erased the Black woman.
How medicine erased the Black woman from a white man's disease.
From a white man's disease, right? I thought medicine didn't erase anything, right? Racist man and racist woman. Ignoring and the dismissing, etc., right? It's just some sort of nebulous term. They always use these compensatory terms instead of using the correct terminology. You know, medicine isn't a person. It's people that do these things. It's either practiced or it's not practiced. Black men, Black women are routinely just disregarded, misdiagnosed, right? Certain drugs. I mean, there's a guy, thing that I think I posted it, where it was on a program called Good Morning Britain, and it was he classifies himself as an Indian doctor that was talking about how it's widespread in the medical industry, health industry, that lots of doctors understand those kinds of discrepancies, how different types of drugs have differing effects. It depending on who you put the drugs into, right? So certain drugs for blood pressure have differing effects on Black people than they do for white people. And apparently this is just common knowledge in lots of in a lot of the medical industry. So you know, the medical industry, you know, like, I mean, like the opioid crisis, right, could only took hold because black people don't get given painkillers enough. Our pain's usually ignored. So white people, that opioid crisis took hold among white people, being addicted to painkillers and things like that. I mean, because white people always listen to when they're in pain. Black people, just walk it off. Walk it off. What do you mean you had this pain, blah, blah, blah? Just walk it off. So, of course, we're going to get misdiagnosed. Anything. Like I said, you know, it's a lot of people, we need to understand it's in economics, education, entertainment, mm-hmm. labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. It's in everything. No matter what you do, if you're on a bus, you're going to see some sort of racism. If you're going to school, you're going to experience some sort of racism. You're going to sit down and watch TV. You're going to experience it. If you see it, it's going to be there. Sometimes you won't see it, but it will be there. And as soon as you scratch the surface, you will see it.
And it doesn't matter how much money you make, mm-hmm. but how high you are as far as like status, as far as like becoming a celebrity or world known or what have you, whatever. Because Serena Williams, she experienced something like this as well when she was giving birth to her daughter. You know, doctors ignored her pain or whatever, and then when they finally did pay attention or whatever, they're like, "Oh, you're right. Come on now, she's not a doctor, but yet she has to bring her pain, you know, to your attention. You're a doctor. The woman is in pain. Why you don't believe her? No, you don't believe her because, she's black. Oh, possibly she can't be in pain, that much pain. It's really disgusting and tacky and trashy.
Yeah, but you know, but it only happened to her because she's a woman. It's not because she's black. I remember Serena, unfortunately, Serena's really, really confused. And I remember when she was having that stuff on the courtroom happen, on the actual tennis court happened to her, and that's what she tried to sort of explain it away as, it's because I'm a woman, they're not letting me express myself on the court. But come on now, all these other, your white female counterparts on the tennis court are able to, you know, cuff, throw tennis rackets, etc., and get all different types of rage and stuff like that, and they're not treated like you, Serena. There must be something else about you that is different to these white women. I don't think it's anything to do with your gender. It's got definitely something to do with you being black, you know. Yeah.
And they used the word misogyny in this article, and I was like, oh no, here we go with this. This isn't a male thing. This is specifically, I'm assuming, I could be in error, but I'm pretty sure this is specifically white males that are dismissing these black women's claim for what they're feeling. So misogyny is just another way to obfuscate from what it, mm-hmm. it really is. So anybody else have anything on this? Or I can kind of share my story about how parallel this thing is to me.
Please share your story.
Sure. Like I said earlier on, there was a situation recently. I had a family member that, you know, was in pain, took her to the hospital, needed emergency surgery. So did the emergency surgery and, you know, was in no condition to, you know, consent to anything else, and the doctors, you know, went to this heavily sedated black female and got permission to do something else. So they did something else and all types of complications, and things still aren't correct from them getting, you know, confirmation from a heavily sedated black female from before. So this is, you know, when you send me this article, when they're just, you know, not even taking into account the actual situation. Why wouldn't you give the family heads up about, you know, okay, this may happen. Let's talk to someone that's more, you know, that's in the right state of mind. And, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot, you know. It just hit home, this article. I don't mean to bring down the show.
I think
with
that. We don't.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's because we don't understand that. When I say we, I'm talking about non-white people. we don't understand racism, white supremacy. We don't understand that we're going to be mistreated because we're under a system of racism, white supremacy. It's not about liking us. It's not about hating us. We don't understand that. It has nothing to do with hate. It's below hate. It's no feelings. No feelings whatsoever. Business.
It's just business.
Exactly. And yeah, that's why we have to take care of ourselves. We got to get away from the soul food. And, you know, just take care of ourselves. Exercise. Like I said, ask questions. Take a notebook with you. Take somebody with you. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's exactly what I did. My attempted mother, I should say, recently had surgery for bowel cancer. And that's when she was first diagnosed. That's exactly what I did. I went with her, took my notepad, noted down every single thing that they said, how long the operation was supposed to take place, what was the prognosis, if she would need chemotherapy afterwards, how long is the healing time expected to last, what's the recovery time supposed to be, et cetera, et cetera. And I had to really write that. I had to write down every single detail. Right, I had to write down every single detail, and I'd advise every non-white person to do that, because like sometimes things are just set up to just misdiagnose you and just ignore you if you do it. And whilst my mom was in the while she's in the hospital, I mean, yeah, there's so many things, but I haven't even got long enough to go into exactly what happened in regards to her stay in hospital and stuff. So I'm just not going to talk about that, because I mean, I wasn't even expecting to talk about that, and I haven't got her permission. So I'm not even going to talk about that. But yeah, it's to be expected. It's definitely to be expected. So I advise everyone to just understand that understanding that this system, like Helen B was saying, is critical. If you just understand that as a basis, that to expect it, expect the mistreatment. If it doesn't come, that's a bonus. It's just a bonus. But if you expect it, so you understand in terms of looking after yourself, just have that grounding. Everything you put in your mouth must be constructive. Everything you do must be constructive. Mm-hmm. If you walk out your house, make sure it's for a constructive reason. If you're going to talk to someone on the telephone, make sure if something is for a constructive reason. If you're going to get something to drink, make sure it's going to have a constructive effect on your body when you put that drink, when you put that glass to your lips. Make sure if you're going to have anything to eat, anything, what is the definition? Look up the definition of food. Something simple, like look up the definition of food. What is food supposed to do? It's supposed to nourish your body. If you're going to put anything in your mouth that is not nourishing to your body, one, it's not even food. It's not even food. You're going to have to make everything you do constructive. And it really is that simple. People like to overcomplicate it, but it's not.
Right.
Make everything you do constructive. If you just stick to that. And I know it's harder to do that because, I mean, this system, it puts loads and loads of distractions in front of you when you try and do constructive things. There's so much distraction. If you want to do this, then this over here distracts you. No, come do this. This is more cute and fuzzy and trying to distract you. But it really is that simple.
And quick and fast.
Yeah, it's quick and fast.
Convenient.
Eat them nasty burgers, right? Eat those nasty burgers. Eat that stuff. And then before you know it, you got all this type of disease and all that type of disease. And then the doctor, if they're honest with you, they're going to say, well, it's diet related. It's diet related,
right. Really,
because I spent all this time eating rubbish. So instead of like when your body encounters the disease now your body's busy taking out the pizza that you had. So now it doesn't even, it's too busy to get rid of this this disease that it's encountering now. You know, it's soldiers, if for want of a better phrase, are busy kind of clearing out the muck that you just put in your, that you put into your system the week before, et cetera, et cetera. So just watch yourselves, non-white people.
Sure.
And two quick things.
Mm-hmm,
also, record when you go to the doctor. If you're unable to write down everything, then record. Use your phone. Every phone nowadays has a recorder. record the conversation, record the doctor's visit, and also get a second, third, and fourth opinion. Don't just stick with one person. Yeah, that's just another thing. You know, go with your gut. Go with your gut. And if you feel like something's not right in the first doctor, go to the next one, if you can.
Absolutely. You only got one life. So, you know, try to protect it as best as possible. And just to add on to what, you know, we were saying about health, the gym, I mean, we all fall off. You know, we all try the gym or a new health routine. I know the new year's coming up and everyone has these big goals. And if you fall off, just start again. It happens to everybody. I'm pretty sure bodybuilders have times where they fall off. And, you know, what matters is you just get back up and try again. I mean, just keep it going. You'll eventually get to where you're going. This next story that Helen sent me was very, very tragic, because I have, you know, small children, you know, around this age, and, you know, I always warn my children about the dangers of social media, and I personally ban it. They're too young, I don't see any benefit to it for young children. So, there was a story, I have to believe this was in Philadelphia, where this young girl named Nyla Anderson, she was doing a TikTok challenge in her bedroom, unattended, alone, where you do something where you choke yourself until, you know, you pass out or something. I can't imagine it, but, you know, she did it, end up, dying from this TikTok challenge. And, you know, it's very tragic, especially this time of year when you have all your family, you know, getting together and whatnot. Helen B., how did this story resonate with you?
Well, what brought this to my attention, listening to global racism talk on the cows, and there was a guy on there from the UK, a black male, and he was talking about how social media, like, we need to take it away from children, how they don't need cell phones and this, that, and the other. And I'm reading this article. First off, I don't like the title of it, Blackout Challenge. Like just that. And if the parents, not blaming the parents, but if the parents would have known or understood racism and white supremacy, they would have been teaching her from a very young age. Yes, she's 10, but even younger, about racism, white supremacy, and she would know or learn to find more constructive things to do with her time than to follow a social media trend challenge, what have you. And it's just so sad. It breaks my heart. And she's not the only one that this happened to. 8 months ago, a 12-year-old boy named Joshua, he was also doing the same thing. And he also passed away, died. I hate to say, that's how horrible this is. And I don't have any children, so it's only a suggestion. Please pay attention to your children. Talk to your children. They don't need cell phones at this time. They're just too young. They're too young for cell phones. And, you know, following all these trends and harming themselves, it's really heartbreaking. Y'all have anything to say about this?
Well, you know what? I didn't even know the 12-year-old. I just checked out on YouTube just a little before before we came on here, and it just said he was brain dead. So if he's passed away, wow, that's even more tragic if he's actually passed away. Wow. Yeah, it's exactly what we were saying before in the last story. It also applies to children. Just teach your children to do constructive things. Just instill it in them from an early age that no matter what you do, make sure it has a constructive result, right? Like Mr. Fuller says, right? It's the four, I can't remember, is it the four wants? I can't remember. It's like the W's. What do you want to do? Why do you want to do it? How do you plan to do it? And what do you expect the constructive result to be? I'm not certain, but I'm just putting it out there. I'm just thinking, if she had that sort of, if someone has told her that, say, like, you know, really, if you wanted to go out there, what is it? I think the challenge is to hold your breath, right? Yeah. Hold your breath for as long as possible, right? If someone had just, you know, you just think of holding your breath for as long as you can. Why do you want to do it? You know, what do you want to do? Hold my breath. Why do you want to do it? I want to hold my breath as long as I can. What, you know, wait, how do you plan to do it?
Can I stop you for a minute? I think that kids, non-white kids, and so-called adults, I think we are so starved for attention. And I think that's why this happened.
We're convinced that attention is currency. We just think that if we just get enough people to just pay attention to us. I mean, we see it on social media all the time. You know, sometimes I get some DMs sometimes about, oh, why are you so serious? Why are you talking about this subject? Why are you talking about racism all the time? Why? I thought, wow, you want to come onto? I've got like that. Under 100 followers or something on Instagram, you want to come and ask me about why I'm not doing something that's more, I don't know, some sort of show offism and stuff. And you think you've got the whole internet out there that is packed to bursting point with people doing non-constructive, idiotic nonsense. If that's what you really want to watch, and that's what you want to want, if you, that's how you want to be entertained, you've got loads of people to go and watch doing that. You can go and do that, right? But I just don't want to be one of those people to influence other people to just do absolute nonsense. And sometimes when you have things like that, like a cell phone in your hand, and you've got other people around you, that you've got stuff. When I was a lot younger, we didn't have the, you know, many years ago in the 1930s. No, I'm joking. Right, but when I was a lot younger, we didn't have mobile phones and internet et cetera like that. And I just think, wow, we got the whole. You got in the palm of your hand. You can find out so many different things, right? Just at the push of a button. And now they've got us so robotized that you're just on automatic doing non-constructive rubbish stuff. You can find out how much, you can find out what's the biggest mountain in the world, what's the highest mountain in the world. You can find out where the deep, what the deepest ocean is. You can find anything. But then what are people using social media for? Let's look up tips. Let's look up tips, makeup.
Let's learn all the ways to harm ourselves. We can take up a hobby. We can learn a different language. Yeah. We can learn an instrument. You can learn anything on YouTube.
Right.
That could be of constructive value. But you want to hold your breath. No, you want to, not blaming the child, but you want to stack crates up on top of each other and walk down the crates and try to go up and hurt yourself. What?
It's crazy. Insanity.
That's,
and if you don't want to do that, you just want to film yourself doing nonsense. Just document yourself. I remember years, I made up that thing. I'm going to post that one, actually. I made up a little phrase called OIDS, right? I'm just going to forget my own thing now. Obsessive Impulsive Documentation Syndrome. That's what I call it. Obsessive Impulsive Documentation Syndrome. That's what a lot of people all over the world are suffering from. You got a mobile phone in your hand with a camera, and all you're doing is just, you're going to eat something, you're going to take a picture of it and put it on thing. You're going to put it on Instagram. You walk down the road, you see a leaf on the floor, you see a leaf on the ground, you're going to take a picture of a leaf like you've never seen a leaf before, and no one else has ever seen a leaf.
Hey, you're talking about me right now, because I think I'm an artist. Excuse me.
This is what they convinced us to do, though, right? When mobile phones first came out, they didn't have cameras on it. And when people wanted to put cameras on mobile phones, they had a little thing they were talking about. I remember. And they were saying, like, what the hell do you need a camera on your phone for? It's just stupid. What do you need it for? You've got cameras already.
They've taken a million pictures of themselves in different positions. Oh, the light, right. This and that. Oh, it's insanity.
I just think it's really ruined. I mean, I understand technology, and look, technology is excellent, and it's a tool, and it's enabling us to make this podcast right now. So technology is not rubbish. Technology is a tool, and depending on how you use it, you can use it for a constructive result, right? For a constructive purpose. But this kind of just, like I said, just nonsense, just picture taking, you know, having effects on your pictures to try and make yourself look real, real nice.
I knew that I the moment I realized that we were insane, when we would spend $200, $300, $400, $500 on a ticket to see somebody perform and have our cell phones in front of us while we're watching the performance.
No.
That's when I knew. I was like, oh, it's done. Oh, what?
Oh, I remember that. I remember going to see KRS-One down here years ago. And people had their and they had their mobile phones there. I saw Ultra Magnetic MCs. I saw Cool Keith down there as well. Right, they had their mobile phones looking at people rapping. It's like, what's wrong with you? You can't even live in the moment now. You can't even enjoy what it is you are doing. You have to document it and show other people, quote unquote, having
fun. If I don't document it, it didn't happen. That's what I'm hearing. If I don't document it, how do I know it happened?
How much fun I'm having. If you're having so much fun, you ain't got time to do that. You haven't got time to do that because you'll be having fun, so-called fun. You know, it's just distractions, more distractions. And most of the people you see doing that kind of stuff, if you look at their pages or across social media, most of the people doing that are not talking about race and white supremacy. I'd say probably 99% of the people that are doing that kind of foolishness are also not talking about race and white supremacy. I don't think it's a coincidence. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a coincidence. Anyway, that's all that's
there's distractions. Big distractions. And where was I going back? Because there's a lot said. Oh, as far as I remember my oldest daughter, she was, you know, some years ago, she was very young. So, you know, always TikTok. And I was like, no, this is social media. So what I've been doing throughout the years, now that, you know, she can read. So I just, hey, sit down, read this to me. I have her read these stories. And this one, I'm going to have her read to me. Next time I see her, I'm going to say, hey, read this to me. And then I'll explain to her why, you know, I didn't want her using TikTok at this point in time, because a child can just think you're being mean because, you know, you don't want me to have any fun or, you know, whatnot. But then when she got to the age where she can read for herself, I just put articles in front of her. Hey, read this to me. I'm washing the dishes. Hey, read this to me. What do you think about it? And I'm just questioning her, and I can see it clicking. It's starting to
click. Excellent.
So it's just something that I would encourage other attempted parents to do. Just you're cooking, you're washing dishes, or doing something, have the child read to you. I have my children read every day, even if it's a chapter, a few pages, just read something to me. And it's so, as they grow up, it doesn't become a chore, because reading is just, you know, everything. Reading is everything. And there was something else I want to go into. It's going to... Once we switch topics, it's going to hit me, which
I think this is an excellent segue into the Baylor family and racism, to talk about racism.
Yeah,
it's like we're already talking about it anyway, aren't we? Just talking to your children about racism, about what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to communicate. I mean, I don't have offspring. So I don't know. I just try and, like, the younger people in my family. I've got a nephew, my younger brother's offspring, and I can just see how influenced he is, even at a very very young age. He's only 3, but you can see the programming, right? Some of the stuff that they made for kids TV. Some of the programming, it's like, we can see it and we don't know how much of it they're digesting. So I'm trying to, I mean, it's not my attempted charge, so you know, I can't really, but all I can do is advise my brother and his wife, my attempted brother and his wife, is to, you know, just limit the amount of television stuff that you allow him to watch. You know, it's very sad. They don't take days off. That's the thing. They keep us really busy, and they don't. The white supremacy system doesn't take days off. It's 24 hours a day, every second of the day, and no matter what you do, that programming is in there. So yeah.
Talking to your children about racism is very, very, very important. I mean, and a lot of people just think that they don't understand, but they do. My youngest child, we taught him about Thanksgiving, you know, how, what happened, we told the truth, you know, the white people came over and tricked the Indians, the Native Americans, and killed them. We tell them the truth. And
how old were they when you explained to them?
This happened the other day. He's 4 years old. And this blew. I had to sit down. When he said this to me, I was like, wow. I had to sit down. So, you know, we were just giving them positive reinforcements. You know, black is, you know, strong. Don't let nobody make you feel that, you know, you're less than because you're black, this, that. You know, we're proud, we're smart. You know, we're saying all this good stuff, this positive reinforcement. And he goes, white is more smarter. So instead of, you know, why do you say that? He said, because they tricked the black people and killed them. So I said, wow. So I didn't know, you know, I don't know what to say to that. I was like, wow. And I was just thinking, I said, there's some grown people, adult people, that don't understand that concept that, you know, the person that outsmarted you is the more powerful person. But that's kind of what he was saying. They were more powerful. So I was like, you know, just because, you know, they trick you don't mean that they're better or anything. You just got to, you know, outsmart them. That's why you got to continue to read and study and whatnot. But it really, like, blew my mind that he would put that concept together, you know, from when we taught him about Thanksgiving and kind of put that into, wow, they're smart. Well, they're smarter because they tricked them and killed them. So it's never too early. It's never too early. They put together concepts that have you game planning. So, I, like I said, I have my children read. I have all types of Rosa Parks, Dr. King, Fannie Lou Hamer, like children's books. So they're just getting exposed to it. So, you know, and I ask questions. What happened? Do you think that was right, how they treated black people? And they get it. Probably not to the degree of, you know, you can't give them a Mr. Fuller book or a Dr. Welsing or Urugu or anything like that. But, you know, just simple stuff. They absolutely get it. You want to jump in, Helen?
As a suggestion, I think you can introduce them to the Word God. I think that's an excellent start.
There's certain words I have actually, like fair, I'm trying to take that out of the vocabulary very early. So I have introduced the word, them getting them to stop using the word fair in regards to justice. I have done that.
That's good.
Yeah, it's interesting. They I think white supremacists do fear that a lot, actually. Non-white people teaching their offspring what racism is, they fear. They have this whole kind of thing with critical race theory at the moment. You know, don't talk to your children about racism, white supremacy. Don't mention it. If you do, then you're just gonna, what is it? You're gonna further divide people and stuff. They use all these types of phrases. You're gonna just, you know, you're gonna give, I don't know, non-white children low self-esteem, etc., if you teach them about racism. But like it says in that article, you know, racist man, they don't say racist man and racist woman, I'm just saying that, but, you know, racism, the whole system, they're going to teach your child, they're going to teach your offspring about racism anyway. And it's probably a lot more constructive for you as the attempted parent to try in some way to prepare their encounter with that system, because in some way they are going to encounter it, whether you like it or not, whether you like it or don't like it, it don't matter. It's inevitable. It's just inevitable. We all wish it wasn't, but you know, it's the whole kind of notion of talking about racism causes racism. No, it doesn't. Talking about the problem doesn't cause the problem. You know, even complaining about it, it's the same type of thing, that weird type of rationale where people say, you know, talking, someone complaining about the problem, you've got the problem maker and you got the reactor to the problem. What do you do? Your manager is somewhere and the person's complaining to you about a problem maker in the building. You don't get rid of the problem maker, you don't get rid of the complainer about the problem, you get rid of the problem maker. Because if you get rid of the complainer, then you still left the problem maker there, and then you're just stirring up more and more and more and more complaints. So, you know, talking about the problem is not going to, doesn't cause the problem. It just, you know, it probably might lead to the problem being taken care of. So, yeah, if I had offspring, that's exactly what I would do. I would definitely try and talk to them about
And if you're going to talk about the problem, please be accurate. White people do not want us to talk about the problem, aka racism, white supremacy, in an accurate manner, using accurate terms. No, they don't want that.
Exactly. And depending on the age, like I said, I'm doing this from the point of view of just slightly trying to do, like, influence my nephew a little bit, because he's, like I said, he's only 3. And I can remember back in my school days, probably about maybe about 4 or something. I think I told you this story years ago. We had, like, over here, we used to have, like, it's a jam jar or marmalade jar that had, like, a picture of a gollywog on the back of the jar. You know gollywog? You guys are familiar with gollywogs, right?
I'm not too familiar.
The toys, it's like some sort of weird kind of black doll character. It looks like a kind of an Americana picture of a black person. Really derogatory, like weird picture of a black person. Red, white eyes and stuff like that, and just weird kind of black type of figure that's supposed to be a black person, right? It's called a gollywog. And that was on the
Jarvis, you ever seen Bamboozled?
I haven't seen the full movie.
Oh, they have it in there. But go ahead.
Okay, yeah. And years ago, there's a teacher years ago that told me that he just sat me down. I was at a table, actually. He just came over to the table, and the jam jar was on the table. And he just asked me a simple question. He just asked me, am I offended by that picture? I was 4 years old. I didn't even know what offended meant. Right, but he just said, am I offended by the thing? And just from him just asking me the question and me looking at the picture, that just threw a switch in my mind from that time. And that's the first time I think that I can actually even remember was someone just asking me a question about racism. It's not like I hadn't heard the word nigger before or anything like that, but someone just had the strength of mind or the foresight of mind to just ask me a question. And just from that, then, you know, I've got a feeling that's probably when things sort of changed for me. I started to try and understand a little bit more about it, even though I didn't know what I was doing at that time. I was only 4 years old. But I just cannot emphasize enough the importance and the influence how important it is to influence your children, counter-program them in the best way that you can, because the system tries to program children all the time, obviously. So, I guess that's probably all I've got to say about that. Probably all I've got to say about that. Probably spoken too much now.
I would just say, just from experience, take the child rearing process very, very, very serious, from what you eat, what you consume, your home. Just, I mean, it's a lot. I was more confused when I had my children. So, you know, I'm just, you know, playing catch up, for lack of a better word. I'm very reactionary. But, you know, due to the fact that, you know, my children are were much younger, I was able to kind of minimize. They, you know, we didn't go through to where the damage is just seemed like it's never going to get out. But, you know, that's the advice I would give if you plan on having children, to anybody. Just plan it out, plan out the first 10, 15 years, education. What would you like a diet to look like? Just plan, because if you don't have a plan, I think I heard Gus say this, if you don't have a plan, the system of racism has one for your child, for your black offspring.
That's so true.
And that is the truest thing. And
That is so true.
I have a family member that's in the school system. So, you know, we have very frequent talks. So, you know, it's from a different perspective. You know, we're seeing, you know, in our bubbles in life, we kind of get used to what we see. We don't actually see what's going on with other people. Intimate view of what's going on through other people. So as a school teacher, you're seeing these children every day. You're seeing behavior patterns. And you can see, wow, this must be going on at the house. This isn't going on at the house. And, you know, some of these stories are like very, very, very tragic. So, you know, take the child rearing process very serious. Just be constructive with your children. I would read, man. Just read. Do a little bit of work. It doesn't take much. It's not, you don't have to spend an hour a day with your children. You know, reading can be 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Just take the time out. I told you it was going to hit me about what I want to say about the last topic, so I got to jump back about the TikTok. I knew it was going to hit me. Well, it's kind of together. So the girl, in the article, they said the girl was left alone in her room, and I can see, as being a parent, you know, out of work, you know, you kind of want the kids to go do this so I can get this situated, or I can go. You kind of send the children away, and they're left to their own devices, and you're running around, you know, from a long day of work, trying to get dinner ready, or, you know, run bath, take baths or whatnot. Yeah, we have to find better ways of filling up their time instead of putting them on a device or a phone to get into this type of stuff. No blame to the family or anything, but I know the feeling when, you know, you just want the kids to just, okay, go over there and sit for a second, go to your room and just relax, and then they get into all types of mischief. So try giving them a book, give them some math problems, set up something instead of just sending them off and away with a device that they can access, you know, anything on YouTube, anything on social media. That'll, you know, try to control what your offspring are consuming. That would just be my advice. And Helen, do you have anything to wrap us up with?
I would like to say that ask 200 plus questions before hitting the bedroom. Choose your partner wisely.
Absolutely.
Don't just, you know, have kids with just anyone and then, oh, just gonna fumble your way through everything. It just, you know, just ask lots of questions. That's very important. Questions, questions, questions. Because you never want to walk into a so-called relationship not knowing. You should know everything. And they should know everything about you.
I second that times 10. A lot of problems will be alleviated if we just did our due diligence in the beginning. Anything, Smoking Damages?
Yeah, I second that too, and I would say if some non-white people that may be listening to this and probably thinking, you know, it's probably not that important to teach your children, teach your offspring about racism, white supremacy, is probably not that important. Well, you know, I think the evidence shows that many, many, many a white supremacist understand exactly how much, how important that is and how constructive that might be for you as a non-white person, how constructive that might be for your offspring, which is why they fear it so much. They really do not want you to teach your children about what racism is and how it works. And we really, really do need to do, we really need to learn a bit more about it. Get Dr. Welsing's book, get Neely Fuller Jr.'s book. I can't emphasize that enough. If you don't know what racism is and how it works, then everything you think you understand will confuse you. And there's many, many ways that they use to keep us confused.
For sure. I would add Uruga to that. Have that as a solid foundation. And
Uruga.
Use counter-racist logic when you know, it'll be a good foundation to build off your understanding of racism. So anything you read, you can kind of take it in terms of that. Very excellent text. I read those more than once, and I will continue to do so because I learned something more than I did before. And, you know, awesome text. Very thankful for those works. So I think that covers everything we had on our list. We did an excellent job. It went smoother than I thought. It's been a while since I did a show, so, you know, got kind of rusty. So hope to, in the new year, kind of be more consistent. This December has been, like, terrible, one of the worst for me as far as just working and trying to be an attempted parent and, you know, whatnot. It's been horrible. But hopefully, you know, next month things will lift up. I can be more consistent on Instagram, on the show. And if you want to find me on Instagram, racism_counter, you can find me there, or the 5W18 show. You can follow either one of those and find me up there. You can find Helen B on, give them your Instagram, Helen, if you want to.
Misty Loves Pitt. Oh, you can follow me on Twitter on Tangeray Jones, Salt and Pepper.
There you go.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram if you want to. It's Reviews Room, just the word reviews and RM at the end. So Reviews RM, REV. Oh man, yeah, REVIEWSRM, Reviews Room, and that's on Instagram. I'm also on YouTube as well under Smoking Damages. So yeah, I think there's some constructive content on there, even if I do say so myself.
There's plenty of constructive content. All of us share constructive content to the best that we can, and we just continue learning. We'll continue learning, trying to get better.
Oh, shout out to the book club, the CRWS book club.
Shout out to the
of course.
Absolutely. Another constructive program. So these counter-racism programs are trying to, you know, pop up and, you know, give people a multitude of options, different ways to consume constructive information, which is much needed. That'll help hopefully solve this problem. And thank you for listening. I thank both of the, I don't even want to call them guests because they're, like, you know, staples. For joining us, and hopefully this has been a constructive listen. Hopefully you can take something away from this and share it. Hopefully we can bring you more constructive information. And until next time,
maintain and stay well.
Right, maintain, stay well, be constructive, be suspicious of everybody, especially whites.
Be suspicious of Father Christmas.
Sure. Stay away from the holidays. Stay safe as possible.
Stay away from the holidays. Stay away from
money.
The mince. Stay
save
away
your
from
money.
The mince pies. Do not buy anyone any presents.
Save your money.
Save your money. Use it for something really constructive. Don't eat rubbish food. try your best not to eat too much rubbish food. Try your best not to get, you know, drink alcohol, etc., etc. Don't get in any fights. The system's set up for you to have fights because there's no reason for the gathering because it's really non-constructive. So then you're in an enclosed space and you're probably going to end up in some sort of argument. If you make up your mind that you don't want to have an argument, hopefully you won't have one.
Yes.
No contact, no conflict.
You took it out of my mouth. I say. And on top of it, we still have the Rona going on. So mask up, be safe, and I'll sign off.
Three-oh.